Hi everyone, welcome to Shattering the Silence podcast, a space where we reveal the untold stories of athletes and explore the often hidden mental health challenges within the world of sports. I'm your host, Audrey Tamburello, a former collegiate athlete and now senior journalism student at Boston University. Today, I'm honored to introduce our guest, Dhruv Raman, a sports psychologist, researcher, and mental health counselor at Boston University. Together, we will dive into Dhruv's research journey, exploring the intricate relationship between mental health and performance. With that said, welcome, Dhruv.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, of course. I'm really excited to get started. So to get started, will you share some insights into like your clinical research and experience with working with mental health and performance-related issues?
Absolutely. So I think the first, in terms of insights, which I got really working with student athletes, was that sports psych services or performance psychology services can often be like an entry point to access mental health services. I think there's a lot of conversation around mental toughness in sport, which when you're in team context or working with teammates or coaches, can sometimes get to the point where you think that if I need help or if I need support, there's something weak or like that there can be stigma around that. So I think sports psychology services, performance psych services, what I've noticed in my experience when I work with athletes is we start off there. That seems like an easier base to start because where athletes can feel much easier to come in and talk about, I'm struggling with performance anxiety or I'm struggling with confidence or some issues with teammates. And as we sort of explore that more and open up more, they're also able to bring in sort of deeper issues or maybe even depending on where we're giving those services, connect to a mental health counselor and work with them independently on sort of deeper and larger things. So I think it's a great gateway for that is something I've noticed, which I wasn't necessarily expecting going into the field. I think overall athletes present with a range of concerns they can come in with. And this can be related to sort of what they're experiencing on the field around like sort of maybe not getting enough playing time, maybe performance anxiety, maybe issues with teammates or their coaches. It can also be stuff off the field related to like sort of, and it's all interwoven. So like related to body image, related to how much work they have. A lot of athletes, if you look at the NCAA research reports, most athletes, student athletes especially, report feeling overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. So it's just that they have a lot they're doing. And yet what I've also been surprised by is that they still tend to use these services. So most settings I worked in, I worked with D3 a little bit. I worked, right now I work in two different institutions where I'm working primarily with Division I student athletes. Everywhere we're pretty much at capacity in terms of how many sports psych professionals we have and athletes accessing it. So despite that sort of full schedule, it seems like they use these services, which is pretty nice.
That's awesome. When they do come to you with mental health challenges, like how do you address them? Like what do you do on your end to help them?
Absolutely, great question. So I think it depends. So I think the first thing really is when we think of informed consent in the therapy or the sports psychology process, we want to define the scope of our services. So I'm actually right now working in two different settings where in one place I can do both mental health and sports psych work, and in another setting, based on institutional rules, I'm limited to only performance psychology work. So that's something we address explicitly as we start and before we start, firstly. So that's like you're sort of defining that. And you're also gauging that constantly with athletes. So, and when I say mental health concerns are slightly, so it's, the work is related, but it can feel different. It's like if we feel someone's reaching the point where they have symptoms which align closely with what we might say a diagnosable condition or a disorder, then I might like refer out and be like, you might need more extended therapy work, which is focused on that rather than sports psych work. So that's I think the first part of the process of just like defining what really is the issue and like sort of starting there. And I think once they do come in, it's a mix of like support and challenge, I would say. So I think initially it's a lot of support and providing them space to talk about their experiences, helping them feel understood, that they are sure that someone is able to witness their experience and like sort of understand their individual experience and how that's unique. And I think once that happens, then really thinking about letting them lead the process. I always say to clients, I come in as be like, once I get information from you, it might seem like I'm throwing questions at you initially, and that's fine. But once I get that information from you, you're driving. So I'm just going to sit next to you and you get to decide where we're going and like what direction we're going in, and constantly checking in with them about what goals they want to work on. And then it might be a lot of giving them skills to get there. So whether that's sort of how do I deal with anxiety? So like sort of we're working on regulation skills, or how do I bring this up with my coach? Or how do I create a plan to optimize practice? Or how do I create a pre-performance routine for each free throw? So things like that. Those are examples of things we might work on. So that's how we would start by addressing some of those issues.
Awesome. That's, I mean, obviously a great plan. And I feel like could help a lot of athletes just in general. This is going back to your research that you've done, like in self-efficacy and metacognition. And how have you seen that like influence athletes' performance? And also like, what do you do like with your research? Like how are you testing it and stuff like that?
Great question. So I think firstly, I would say, let's start by defining those terms, both of those, like self-efficacy and metacognition. So self-efficacy is really sort of a way to say confidence. It's the same thing as confidence, but it's slightly different in that you can be confident in not being great at something. Self-efficacy is really about your how you think, how well you might do at a task. And it's one of the most consistent predictors of performance. So it tends to, so we give real importance to feeling confident. And it turns out that it is important to feel confident in your skills. And there's physical sort of mechanisms which explain that, because a lot of the skills that athletes execute, they've learned over several years. And a lot of it is about trusting their bodies to execute those skills in sort of pressure moments. So A, self-efficacy, confidence is like sort of an important point of performance. Metacognition is really thinking about thinking, very simply. And it turns out that how we think about these different things, mental states that come up, is important, especially now as we have a lot of conversations on social media and everywhere about mental health, which is great. There is more awareness. So people can recognize and when anxiety is showing up, or when sort of lack of motivation is showing up and things like that. And it turns out how we think about that anxiety, or how we think about that lack of motivation, how we think about that confidence, is also important in influencing the process. So it's almost like what we work on with a lot of athletes in applied work is more so is thinking of when the anxiety shows up, or when the lack of motivation shows up, which is not something you're actively putting inside your head. It's just coming up by itself. How do we respond to that? So that's really the metacognition part of like thinking about thinking. In terms of my research, I actually, like one of the studies I worked on or I did was really thinking about what happens when you ask someone how confident they are and pose that question. So you're really like posing this metacognition question about their confidence. And it turns out that just asking that question, and we typically do this in conversation as well, I like to think, is like, are you feeling nervous? Or are you feeling excited? Something like that. And that itself seems to have, might interfere with them performing optimally, is what I found. I just did a study where one group was asked that question. They were asked to rate on like a scale their levels of self-efficacy, and another group was not. They were just asked to do something else in the middle of a task. And it turned out that the other group tend to show sort of more improvement across that sort of task than this group. So that was a cool thing to find in terms of just, again, thinking about how even activating certain concepts can feel. And when we think of like opponents can do that to us, like when we think of like especially duels and like maybe you're taking a penalty and like goalkeepers coming in and saying something in your ear and how's that affecting you and things like that. And then a lot of the work is really thinking of how do we build that mental strength so that doesn't affect us. But that's an example of like a study I did. And now I think in terms of my research, I'm really thinking and moving to a direction where all these things play a role in building individual athlete performance profile. So this basic idea, which I'm exploring, and there's a lot of research on this, is that each athlete has their own mental state at which they are at their best. So some people might need a high level of anxiety. Some people might need a low level of anxiety. Some people might need sort of to focus on something external, something far away. Some people might need a different kind of focus. And helping figure that out for each person can be helpful, and then helping them get there more consistently. So that's what I'm really working on right now, very broadly.
Yeah. That's awesome. I know that you were just touching on how obviously like every athlete's a little bit different with their anxiety levels. And I was wondering, so, I mean, I used to be, again, a former collegiate athlete. And when I was a former collegiate athlete, like, it was mandatory. I mean, it still is mandatory to go see an athletic trainer, say, if you get, like, a physical injury. But a, like, sports psychologist is not mandatory. And so I was wondering what your thoughts on that are.
I think the mandatory part is an interesting conversation, because I feel we, in a very different context, I've gone through a graduate training program in mental health counseling, and like sort of I'm doing my PhD right now. And in both of those contexts, we have the same conversation. Should all therapists be mandated to be in therapy? And we think about that as well. But I think mandatory is a tough sort of, base to have. I feel like what I would say is strongly encouraged maybe is better. And because, again, I think forcing someone to enter a context to have a conversation with someone can feel really sort of threatening in a way, especially if someone doesn't trust the process enough. And I think student athletes are really coming from a good position of like, I'm not sure if what I tell this person, and we really work a lot to ensure that they understand that, but I'm not sure if what I tell this person is going to go to my coach. And the case is that that's not the whole point of the therapy sports psych process is confidential. But I feel like sometimes there can be that lack of trust. But I think to your point, having someone on the team is really helpful. And I think a lot of what I've done, or we've been encouraged to do in our training especially, has been when you go to a team, I'll just be like, let's set up an initial 15-minute conversation. I just want to know about you. And then when someone comes and meets for like 10, 15 minutes and they talk, I'll typically just ask them to talk me through their story of their sport, what some of their strengths are, what some of their mental strengths are, what's been some tough experiences and things like that. That really gives them an avenue to open up and like just be like, oh yeah, this can be interesting. And that almost gives them that access to like, I can go here if I'm struggling, or maybe I need to go here right now and like work on this either way. So I think the idea there of having someone there in a team context, which is very rare right now, unfortunately, even with Division I college sports or all levels of sports, it's rare to have someone there. So I think even having someone there is the start institutionally. And I think at that point, then you can strongly encourage people to just be like, keep a low bar, have a 15, 20 minute conversation. That's how I think about it. But I think to your point, it is helpful. I think when we think of athletic trainers and what they're doing with sort of the body system, I think the mind's very much a part of what you need to be functioning optimally to like play well. And so I think definitely having someone there in that environment, then giving athletes access to that is a really important step.
That's I mean, that's also a great perspective. I was thinking obviously from a little bit more of like, okay, like if it was mandated, then it's like, okay, it's become more like normalized, so people now will like feel more comfortable going. But you're always like, you're very much right in the fact that like, at least from my experience, like, oh, you don't want this getting back to the coach, or you don't want it getting back to other people, which again, it's confidential, but there's always that like sort of trust that you have to be able to have, which is another just barrier to the whole problem. But okay, so besides, I guess, maybe potentially having a sports psychologist on a team to just help, what other... like, what more do you think can be done to support athletes and their mental health at the collegiate level, at really any level?
I think our phones are a great resource to tap into. So I think, like, a lot of actually organizations do, like, mental health apps and mental performance apps, even which sort of you can individualize to your team context. So coaches and like sort of the sports psychologist you have and all can look at that. And that can just be a resource for student athletes. So even if they don't feel comfortable talking to someone, they have these list of things where, what do I do if I have anxiety, or how do I like sort of work through if I'm not able to sleep the night before the game? What are some skills I can learn from that, learn around that, and like sort of do something about it? So I think phones, I would think, are a great way to disseminate that information and have something on that, and even have a check-in. So like sort of sending a mood check-in every now and then, and like, how are you feeling? And just like sort of selecting that for the whole team, it can become like a place where even you're sort of supporting each other and in a fun way. So I think phones are a great resource to tap into, especially in through apps and in like individualized interventions, even through like messaging groups. I think that's the most basic way you can start off. But I know there are more like sort of integrated, fancier apps which can help teams really sort of build on that. And I think really it's about building a culture around having conversations around mental health, and then noticing for each other when challenges are coming up and really sort of picking on that. So I think the most important thing can really be sort of bringing these conversations up and thinking about it as something important to address and even prevent as you start off each season. And I think that's where I feel like the responsibility is really placed on people who have more power. So whether that's, I guess, in a whole college context, whether that's an athletic director, or if that's a head coach or an assistant coach, or even team captains, I would say, for every sport, where they can come in and like really establish what those norms look like. And like, this is something we will check in about and talk about, and even show care. And like, I think one of the other, like one of us, a micro interaction sort of I'll share around that is really even thinking about, how often do we check in with student athletes, even in our teams, or maybe especially with coaches and athletes, about their lives outside of being an athlete? A lot of what they can feel like in a sporting context is like, I am only this, and that's all of what my self-esteem or self-worth might look like. It can feel like that. And so even checking in about like, what's life outside? How's school going? How's like life? What are you doing for like care outside of this house? How people at home and things like that? I think checking in and like, so those are like very micro interactions that can create a culture like that. But I think those are two ways I can think of outside of just having an individual, is really using psychoeducation through phones, through whatever mediums, and then creating a culture of like conversation and support. Yeah,
totally. I feel like even just like you were saying, just asking what, like how you are outside of your sport. I mean, again, often look, it gets overlooked. And yet it's like so needed. I feel like, again, from my personal experience, like I just wish that someone was there to just ask that simple question. Cause I feel like I would have honestly responded. I was like, oh, well, no one cares, cause no one's ever asking. And it's just like it's some of like the smaller things like that. It's like, no, there's a whole life outside of your sport that, obviously is extremely important, and it's, you're waiting for someone to help you and figure that out. But okay, so if you think maybe like a friend needs help, or like a student athlete you know needs help, or any athlete, what are some warning signs that like we should be on the lookout for?
Yeah, great question. I think it's our daily routine. So I think noticing when there's change in how you usually see someone, and I think thinking of things like sleep. So if you're a roommate and you're noticing sort of a big change in like sleeping patterns, what time someone's going to sleep, or how much they're sleeping, or maybe they're waking up a lot in the middle of the night. Sleep, especially, I think with a lot of mental health disorders specifically, sleep is impacted. So I think sleep is a big marker. Eating can also be part of it. Eating disorders are unfortunately quite common with student athletes and female student athletes specifically. But eating is something, eating behavior, change in eating behavior can also be a marker. And I think generally just trusting your gut with like, if you're feeling, you're seeing body language and noticing body language with a change around their mood or how often. I think isolation is probably the other thing. So I think sleep, eating, isolation, I would say like probably three parts of that. And then I think just body language. So you're also thinking about all of these things together. And if you're noticing change, I think, I would be concerned, be alarmed a little bit. And then what do you do after that?
Yeah.
I think that really depends on your relationship with that person. If you're close enough, I would just reach out to them and talk to them directly, ask them, I'm concerned about you. And like, people, in my experience, I noticed people like feeling seen and supported. And even when someone's sort of seeing their struggle, I think that itself can feel really nice in a way. And then sort of be like, what do you want to do about it? Let them lead the process and help them do the effortful part of like, whether that's reaching out, doing research on what resources do they have access to? How do I book an appointment? Things like that. You can do that for your friend and teammate. I think it becomes harder when you don't share that kind of relationship and you're noticing that. So I would then actually maybe first talk to someone who does share that relationship. So if you have a friend who's closer to this other friend of yours who you see struggling, reach out to them. And then I think if that's not the best way, even going through sources of support that you can trust. So I think really thinking of, and you have to be aware of like what environment you're in. Going to a coach can sometimes be like a lot of the athletes I worked with shared like, yeah, a coach is super supportive. In fact, they're the one who told me I should come here and see you. So I think going to a coach can be a helpful way to go about it. But sometimes you can be in an environment where that might not be the best idea. So maybe you go to your AD first, if that's someone who feels supportive, and be like, I'm concerned about this friend. And like, I just want to bring that up to you and think about that. So I think there are different ways of approaching that. It's really about getting them through that first point of support. And I think then letting them take the lead and like really encouraging them and like mildly, gently pushing them to that first point. It's like, just go speak to someone once, or just try this, the Headspace app to like sort of meditate, or like, you know, just do that 2 minutes. Oh, I'll do that with you. Or let's go for a walk, or let's make sure we get dinner together. Whatever that first point of support or like initial change is, I think just leading them, mildly pushing them there.
Like say like, you have that like first initial point of support, and then it's like, obviously it's on, maybe not completely on them to like figure it out, but like, again, it's more in their hands at this point.
Yeah.
So like, say that they obviously don't want to get help, but you still notice that they're in a decline. What do you do then?
I think I would gauge firstly how concerning that feels. So I feel like really think about what level of distress they're experiencing. So I think if someone's like really not sleeping, not eating, they're like sort of, you notice them, like you're really concerned about their general like sort of health and ability to function. And like, I think it would start showing up in different spheres if they're not sort of feeling that. Then I think it would be time to like bring it up to someone who's able to sort of intervene and like sort of mandate something, or like be like, you must like to continue. It's almost like, you know, if you're injured, it's like to continue playing, you want to see someone, and it can be similar. I think those are like extreme cases. Those are rare cases where people have such high levels of distress where they might be like really isolating themselves or going to a point where they start becoming dysfunctional. I think in other cases, mostly that won't be the case. Mostly someone's just feeling resistant to help in some way. I think I would, it's a tough space to navigate. I don't think there's a blanket right answer. I think I would really, based on your relationship with the person, I would really gently keep nudging them. I would even explore that resistance. Think about like what sort of feeling challenging. I think usually I always go in with the assumption of whoever I'm meeting is like, usually people are trying their best and trying their best for themselves and for others. So if that's the case, what's the challenge with like speaking to someone? And I think usually it will be something around, I don't trust that person. They're part of like this university I'm in, for example, and like sort of I don't trust that they'll work in my best interest. They're really thinking about the university or thinking about athletics here and stuff like that. Or it might be like, I'm already overwhelmed and I can't take an hour out in my schedule, and so I can't do that. So I think exploring what that resistance is, because we do that in our conversations all the time as well. So I would really approach it from a point of curiosity and not from a point of like, this person doesn't want help. And also recognizing your limits. I think the final thing also here is that really noticing that it is someone else's journey. And I think you can be there, be supportive to them to an extent. Again, I think the key being, depending on what your relationship with them is like, depending on how close you are, you might feel the need to sidestep or overstep someone and be like, okay, I'm going to do this for you. I'm going to like really push you depending on how close you are. But if you're not that close, I don't think that's your decision to make then. Then you sort of step away, you do what you can, and then you step away.
Yes, totally. Great advice that I think obviously that a friend could use in a time of need when they notice that someone is down. And so I guess to the final question to wrap this up, like based on your experience, like what are 2 to 3 things that you would recommend or suggest like an athlete to try to do in order to manage the mental health like strains that come with being an athlete?
Absolutely. I think the first thing I would say is keep your basics, like focus on your basic living skills in terms of like your, like I said, like your eat and sleep and even like exercise or doing something fun. I would say like something fun, something which feels fulfilling every day a little bit. So I think those are really correlated to everything in our lives, like with our mental health and stuff like that. And I'm like, well, sort of reaching the point of sounding like a parent, but I think it's unfortunately that ends up being eat and sleep, sleep especially, and eating ends up being two of the most important things we can do for like our health, mental health, physical health. And both of those are connected sort of generally. I think beyond that, what I really focus on helping people a lot or thinking about a lot is like building routines, other routines that can feel helpful. So pick one activity or two activities, whether that's meditation, whether that's going for a walk, whether that's sort of, whether that's like maybe like a mental performance game you find online or like something which feels engaging to you, something which feels fun. Maybe that's forcing yourself to be like, I'm going to talk to a new person every day, or I'm going to like have a, go have a meal with a different teammate every week or something like that. So building routines into your sort of life, I think can be super helpful. Why I say that is because when you're going through such an overwhelming schedule, actively trying to change things is really hard. So I think when you build something into a routine, it just becomes default. Like when on Wednesdays at 7 p.m., what you usually do is have dinner with a different teammate, then that's not that hard to think about when that comes up. But if you actively do it every week, it's harder. So I would say those are a few things. And I would say just in terms of in the moment, like more while you're performing and things like that, more sport performance stuff. And even with mental health, I think with anxiety is something which shows up for a lot of people, and really sort of thinking about that. I think your breathing is the number one thing which you can sort of center around, and it's something you always have with you. So like really looking up like sort of breathing techniques. There are simple breathing techniques where box breathing is something a lot of people use pretty commonly, and just like sort of doing those breath of like inhaling for 4 seconds, holding for 4 seconds, exhaling, and then sort of holding again, or just like taking a deep breath, ensuring you're inhaling with your belly. And that's, again, your breath is something. Breath is like a superpower you always have. And just to give, like, drive more motivation towards the breathing specifically, our bodies, when we're feeling anxious or overwhelmed, our bodies feel like we're in danger. Our bodies are really, like, evolutionary brains are really telling us that something dangerous, threatening is happening for us. And when we take time to just take a deep breath, that communicates to our bodies this idea that we're fine. Like, we're not struggling for oxygen. We're not going to die. It's going to be fine. And that's usually, for most of our stresses in life, that's usually true. We're not going to die, whatever happens. So it might feel really overwhelming and challenging in that moment, but just breathing can help you recenter and usually even lead you to better outcomes, even in that moment, however hard that might be. So those are 3 things I would say, like take care of your sleeping and eating, build routines into whatever you like or you want to do, and then use your breath like as a tool you always have.
I love those. Again, great pieces of advice. So this, just as we wrap up, Dhruv, I want to thank you for sharing your valuable insights and expertise on how we can better support athletes' mental health. Your research and clinical experience have provided valuable, insights into the critical role mental health plays in sports performance. So thank you again for joining me today in talking about this conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Audrey, for having me. I had a lot of fun sort of talking about this. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, so then as a reminder for all of my audience, if you're an athlete, you know, struggling with a mental health challenge, help us with and within reach, and it's okay to not be okay. Feel free to explore additional resources and inspiring stories on my website. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes as we will be continuing to explore the intersection of mental health and sports in hopes of shattering the silence.